All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am answering your listener questions pertaining to the All-22 of the Falcons' Week 17 win over the Carolina Panthers.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon fan sites on the interwebs. And today I'm going to be answering listener questions pertaining to the All-22 from the Week 17 game, as well as some questions about the upcoming Week 18 game against the Los Angeles Rams. And we'll get into that. But first, I want to remind you guys that we do give away a Pro Football Focus Edge subscription on this here podcast. That is a $40 value that you can potentially get for free. Included in that $40 value is player grades, snap counts, position rankings, fantasy projections, tools and charts, draft coverage, and much, much more. All you have to do to win that is to enter your name by going to Locked On Falcons on iTunes, posting a five-star review, entering your Twitter handle in that review, and you will automatically be entered each week to a random drawing each week to win that Pro Football Focus Edge subscription. If you do not win it, then by all means, you can still get great Pro Football Focus content on the Locked On Podcast Network by checking out Jeff Ratcliffe every Thursday on Locked On Fantasy with Vinny Iyer, as well as Mike Renner every Wednesday on Locked On NFL with Matt Williamson. All right, guys, before we get to the questions, I do want to talk a little bit about sort of the roster moves that the Falcons have made. They put Andy LaVitre on IR. We talked about this, I think, on the Rapid Reaction show on Monday, that the expectation, given that LaVitre missed the game, and I think I think the final tally was like seven snaps or something like that. I think he was basically off the field by the second, third down of the opening series. Given the fact that he wasn't able to go last week or finish the game, that it was likely that even if he was going to try to gut through the injury, then he wasn't going to play this postseason, just because it was not an injury that would heal quickly. So it's no surprise to see that the Falcons decided to shut him down for the remainder of the season, however long that will be, 1 week, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever. One of the questions that I think someone asked was like, how big a loss is that, or how do the Falcons roll with that? So I'll save that, but it is a significant loss, I think, considering who the Falcons are playing this week, the Los Angeles Aaron Donalds. And even though I think Garland has filled in admirably these last couple of weeks, so I don't think it's a huge, huge blow to the Falcons offense. We'll get into more in depth about where the concerns are along the offensive line heading into this game a little bit later with some of these questions. But the interesting move to me was that the Falcons elevated Terrence McGee from the practice squad and brought him back. You know, he's the guy infamous for taking over Brian Hill, my beloved Brian Hill spot on the roster. This is interesting because the Falcons downgraded Devontae Freeman today. He did not practice on Wednesday or on Tuesday this week. I'm sorry, the short week is throwing me off. On Tuesday this week due to a knee injury. And typically if it was a minor issue, you wouldn't expect the Falcons to immediately go grab a running back off the practice squad. You know, if it was like, oh, they just need him to rest and he'll be ready to go by Saturday. The fact that the Falcons immediately elevated a running back implies, whatever you want to say, that there's a decent chance that Devontae may not play this week. So that is a concern. That is something we will be monitoring as the week wears on. If Devontae does not play in this game, that is a huge, huge blow to the Falcons' chances of winning on Saturday. It's not to say that they can't do it without him, but, basically Devontae is one of the team's three best players. And for any NFL team, if you lose one of your three best players, it's going to be a dramatic effect on your roster. In fact, you can make the argument that more so, even though Matt Ryan and Julio Jones would be the two other guys that I would consider in that top three for the Falcons, you can make a case for Desmond Trufant and Keanu Neal as the top five guys. At least that's the case. And Mac, those are the six guys I would make the case for as the best players on the Falcons roster. Devontae, out of all those guys, has probably been the most consistent player this season. on the entire roster. Consistently good this season. I think him on offense, I think Neal has been the most consistently good player on defense this season. And so you can make the argument that more so than Julio Jones is more of an X factor than necessarily the foundation of the Falcons offense this season. And Devontae has been more of a foundational piece in terms of everything else is built on top of him, as opposed to sort of being, you know, that guy that can go off any given play, any given week, and be this huge, huge, you know, thorn in the side of opposing defenses and defensive coordinators. So if he does not play this week, that is a huge blow. That is something, you know, that it's not going to be easy for the Falcons to overcome. Obviously, they've had to deal with him being nicked up already this season. They were still able to win games. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to panic, you know. But I do think in the postseason, you kind of need your best player to play. And you can make a strong case that Devontae, based off of his consistency, his consistently high-level play this season, has been the Falcons' best player, the MVP on the team this year. So that's what I wanted to say before we get into the questions. So I think that was worth addressing and talking about. And as the week wears on, we will talk more in depth about that potential issue. Before we get to the questions, I do want to remind you guys, if you want to stay locked on the Los Angeles Rams, then you should check out host Brad Mader, the host of the Locked On Rams podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, wherever podcasts can be found. So, guys, first question. Let's get into it. Let's answer some of these questions. A lot of good questions this week. As you guys well know, and I remind you guys multiple times over the course of the last few months, any questions I do not hit on today's episode will be left over for the leftover mailbag that I post on LockedOnFalcons.com. And if you're listening to this episode and you're like, I have a question and Aaron didn't answer it this week, then you still have time. I'm going to post that on probably Friday. So, you know, if you're listening to this before Thursday evening, you still got a shot to get your question in and get it answered on LockedOnFalcons.com. So the first question comes from Trey at real_DMDMcLee. Sorry, I butchered your Twitter handle. Any chance Matt Ryan can become Aaron Rodgers of the playoffs and lead the Falcons to the NFC Championship game? Not to say that the Falcons don't have a shot at making the NFC Championship game, but I would be skeptical of it being sort of facilitated by Matt Ryan. I don't think Matt Ryan has played with the sort of confidence and command of this offense that I think you really want to see and would like to see for a guy to be able to go into the postseason and elevate his play. I think Matt Ryan has looked more like the pre-2012 playoff version, you know, of himself, at least relative to the regular season performance. Not to say that he's played poorly or anything like that, but I just don't see him as a guy that you can really be very confident is going to be like, okay, Matt Ryan's going to be locked in this January, given the way that he's played as of late. So I'd be skeptical of that, Trey. But here's the thing. Here's the kicker. When you have Julio Jones, it kind of, there, you know, not to say it doesn't matter, but it is one of those things where, like, you don't need Matt Ryan to do the heavy lifting because Julio Jones is capable of taking over any game that he's, you know, he plays in. And so when you have a receiver of that caliber, the quarterback doesn't necessarily have to do all the work. And it's more just like, just throw it to Julio and let him do his thing. And so by proxy or by default, Matt Ryan could look really good just simply because he's feeding Julio Jones quite a bit in these games. So not to diminish Matt Ryan's contribution, because it is a two-way street between a quarterback and a wide receiver, but clearly there are times where Julio Jones is doing 75% of the work as opposed to Matt Ryan. And there's other ways when that's not the case, even though I don't think it's hard for me to say that it's ever been a 75% Matt Ryan and 25% Julio Jones, just because, like, you know, what situation is Julio Jones not doing amazing things, you know? So it's always going to be at least 50% with Julio. But, yeah, there's your answer, Trey. I would be skeptical that you're going to see a whole new Matt Ryan suddenly in January. But again, when you have a receiver like Julio Jones, it's certainly possible just by throwing him the darn football. Next question comes from Dominique Patterson at The Real Pat Man. I want to know who's the real culprit on the offensive line that caused the run game to be so limited. My guess is it comes from either the right guard or tight end spots. Dominique, I would say, generally speaking, over the course of the season, I would probably say those statements are true. I would probably throw fullback in there as well. In terms of guys that have not consistently lived up to their roles this season in terms of doing their jobs, in terms of the running game and contributions in the running game. But on Sunday against the Panthers, you know, I don't think Derek Coleman played particularly well. He was his usual sort of underwhelming, erratic at best self. I don't think Ben Garland had a great game, but most of his struggles came when he was trying to block Kawan Short one-on-one, which I think most of us human beings can understand that that's an extremely difficult task. But I do think specifically to this Week 17 game, the real culprit was Alex Mack. And I, you know, I said this on Twitter, and it was not a particularly popular opinion, according to some people, in terms of the responses. But, like, you know, I think I said last week on Twitter that I don't think Alex Mack playing with a bad calf or Alex Mack playing at all makes a huge difference. Like, I think it's kind of the same, because in my eyes, when you give Alex Mack a bad wheel, which he has in a calf strain, and he, like, he's not going to be the normal effective player that he's going to be. And a big part of the reason why I say that is because I think people generally have misconstrued why Alex Mack is as good as he is and what Alex Mack's real value to the team is. It's not necessarily in terms of his quote-unquote leadership and intelligence and his ability to make line calls and all that, and being that sort of sounding board for Matt Ryan and making, like, all that sort of the quote-unquote neck-up stuff that the center position requires. But I think it's really the neck down stuff. That's what makes Alex Mack hashtag elite. And I think, you know, it's not to say that Alex Mack doesn't contribute in sort of the neck up stuff, the mental aspects of the position, but relative, he's only good at that relative to guys like Mike Person and James Stone, who have Mike Person didn't play a single snap in a game as a center prior to him being thrust upon the starting center spot in 2015. And so he was a very inexperienced center who never really made line calls prior to that. He was a college offensive tackle, and then he moved to guard in the NFL. So, you know, he was playing a brand new position. So obviously he was not good at that. And obviously Alex Mack is significantly better at that than Mike Person, and significantly better than James Stone was in that role as well. But relative to any sort of starting center in the league, like Joe Hawley, the guy who should have been the starting center for the Falcons in 2015 had the Falcons not released him, I don't think Alex Mack is significantly better at making line calls than Joe Hawley is. And in reality, when I look at the Falcons' ability to handle blitzes, handle stunts, particularly this season, I have been underwhelmed with that since Alex Mack has been in the Falcons uniform, to be honest with you, particularly relative to when Todd McClure was the center and we had a similar offense and he was making the line calls. And I think Mack, you know, maybe it's not fair, maybe because my memory is not as, you know, sharp then in, you know, 06 as it is today. But like, I think Alex Mack relative to then is, it's like a, I don't, night and day is too strong a word, but I just don't think he's living up to that sort of reputation that people are thrusting upon. Where Alex Mack makes a difference is, trying to get back to the point, is his run blocking, his ability to make those reach blocks, his ability to win at the line of scrimmage, and then that frees up the guards and to play. That's why Lavitre's play made a dramatic jump from 2015 to 2016. That's why Chris Chester, you know, while he wasn't perfect in 2016, was a key part of the Falcons running attack being as effective as it was. I think it's one of the reasons why Wes Schweitzer has been able to transition, you know, relatively well to being a starter after not playing last season. Not to say that he's perfect by any means, but like, he doesn't, you know, you got one spot locked down as a blocker, you know? So I think what ended up happening in this game, like, Max really struggled. Like, they put Short on him a lot. Short pushed him around. It wasn't just Short. It was Kyle Love. It was Star Latulele. It was Luke Kuechly. You know, it was like he just couldn't move as well. You saw times when he was trying to make blocks down the field. He was slow out of the blocks. His balance wasn't great. He wasn't being able to generate power because, you know, he's basically playing on one leg. And that's what happens, you know, when you're trying to move 300-pound human beings and you have half as much strength in one of your legs, it's going to be extremely hard to do that. It's one of the reasons why last season when Jake Matthews injured his knee and down the stretch and even into the Super Bowl, his play was not great. It's hard to play offensive line at a high level when you have one bad wheel. So I think if you're going to blame many of the issues that the Falcons or the inability of the Falcons to run the ball against Carolina particularly effectively, I think, you know, Alex Mack's injury is the reason. Not to, you know, throw shade at Alex Mack or anything. You know, the great Javon Mack. I don't know how many people realize that that Alex Mack's real name is Javon. Javon. I don't know if he pronounces it Javon, but it's spelled Javon. So, fun fact. You know, the real question about comparing Alex Mack to Joe Hawley, though, is who's the better flopper? Alex Mack has really given Joe Hawley a run for his money. I didn't think anybody could be better at flopping after the whistle, after, you know, pushing a guy and then flopping when he retaliates after the whistle like Joe Hawley. But Alex Mack has done that pretty consistent at a hashtag elite level this year. All right, we got some more questions that we want to get into. But again, you guys can check out more playoff content on the Locked On Podcast Network by checking out Matt Williamson, the host of the Locked On NFL podcast, wherever podcasts can be found. Similar question from Luke at the Dirty Bird 1988. How did the O-line look? Did the loss of LaVitre make a significant difference that we should worry about in the playoffs? I don't think the loss of LaVitre was huge against Carolina. I think LaVitre's better than Garland, but I don't think the drop-off is massive to the degree where it's like, oh my God, we can't function. You know, I think you can make the case that LaVitre is more consistent snap-to-snap than Garland is. You could also make the case, I think, when Garland's, you know, really nailing his blocks, as there have been some sort of highlight reel type of blocks that he's made over the last couple of weeks, that those he does that more often than LaVitre does. But then again, his lows are a little bit lower than LaVitre. So his highs are a little bit higher, but his lows are a little bit lower. You know, there are times when he just gets beat really cleanly, and you're just like, whew, he didn't even touch that guy. Is it a concern for the playoffs? You know, it's obviously, when you have to go up against a guy like Aaron Donald, not being full strength at the guard position, it is a concern. I don't know if I would, you know, quote unquote, worry about it to the huge, huge degree. I don't think it's going to break the Falcons' offense. I mean, Aaron Donald can break the Falcons' offense, but even if Zach Martin was playing in this game for the Falcons at left guard, Aaron Donald could still break the Falcons' offense. So, you know, I don't think losing LaVitre is going to make that huge a difference because it's not like, you know, you're going against Aaron Donald. You know what I'm saying? You know, Aaron Donald's arguably the best player in the NFL. You know, yeah, I don't think that's a controversial statement. Again, it's arguably, but you could make a strong argument he's the best player in the NFL. He's the hardest player in the NFL to stop. That includes players like Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, Aaron Rodgers, whoever, J.J. Watt, whoever else you want to throw into that conversation. He's arguably at the top of that list. So, you know, it's going to be a problem regardless, is the point I'm trying to make. And it's not like the Falcons' road to the Super Bowl is going to get any easier in terms of the interior. You got Fletcher Cox next week, should the Falcons win this week. Potentially you're playing the Vikings in the NFC Championship game, who is, I think right now are listed as the favorite to win the NFC. And, you know, they have a guy by the name of Linval Joseph, who's one of the better run stoppers in the league, you know, playing in the interior. So it's not going to be easy again. So we'll see how it goes. You know, I thought the offensive line did a competent job against arguably more talented front in the Carolina Panthers, given Short, Latulele, Butler, Peppers, Addison. You know, Addison has historically given Jake Matthews a lot of problems. Julius Peppers is Julius Peppers. Kawan Short is Kawan Short, you know. So I think you can make the argument that the Falcons, given the injuries this past week, given the fact that historically those guys have a tendency, like Charles Johnson really gave Ryan Schrader fits the last time we played the Panthers as a run blocker, not so much as a pass rusher. So I think the Falcons' offensive line held its own given some of the issues that we thought heading into the week, certainly that I was concerned about. We discussed on last week's preview episode. So, you know, I give them a passing grade, but it certainly was by no means their best performance this season. All right, Brandon Coleman at BChapX17. What's your take on Hardy and or Roberts filling in for Gabriel as he recovers from the hamstring injury? Obviously, you're going to lose a lot of speed with Gabriel being out of the lineup. It, you know, neither Hardy or Roberts can replace that. If you want speed back in the line, then you got to go with Marvin Hall. You know, the interesting thing about Andre Roberts is he played 8 snaps in Week 17, and that's the most he's seen on offense all year. In fact, that's more snaps in Week 17 than in previous 10 games combined. Again, that was only 8 snaps. It's been one of the more, you know, I would probably say baffling things this season. Not baffling in the sense of like, I don't understand why this could happen, but baffling in terms of at least, you know, my track record of accurately predicting things is not particularly good, but baffling in the sense of, I was surprised to see how little the Falcons have used Roberts on the offense this year. You know, it's not like putting him there would have made a huge, huge difference. He's not the same player he was a couple of years ago. But, you know, 3-4 years ago, he was a high-end number three receiver in this league. And basically, you know, he's played 31 snaps and gotten 4 targets all year long. And it was just baffling to think that they wouldn't use him more than that. This season, you know, you basically got the same amount of usage that we saw 2 years ago on offense that Eric Weems got, which was basically only get work in garbage time. That was just weird. So I don't expect the Falcons to suddenly, you know, figure out ways to use Andre Roberts in week 18 that they haven't been using him, you know, the last 17 weeks. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. As for Hardy, I do think it'll be interesting, assuming if you think Gabriel will be out of this game. I think we've talked about it before on this podcast, but like we talked about Hardy's future as the number three, as the replacement for Gabriel. We talked about how Hardy is at his best in the slot. I imagine going into this game, just because they've done it in the past, the Rams will use Tremaine Johnson to shadow Julio Jones. And that, you know, Nickell Robey, the guy, by the way, I wanted the Falcons to sign really, really badly this offseason when everybody was saying, like, we don't need a cornerback. And I was like, well, we kind of need Nickell Robey, if you ask me. But he's their slot corner, and he's played pretty well. I know some of the Pro Football Focus metrics have graded him as, like, one of the top 5 nickels in the league this year. You know, the other cornerback is Troy Hill, who I think replaced – someone got hurt, I think. I'm blanking on who the other starter was. I don't know enough about Hill to really judge him. You know, I'll watch the film probably tomorrow, and I'll probably tweet out some thoughts on that or save them for one of the preview episodes that we do later this week, so stay tuned to that. As for Robey, I know he's graded out pretty well. I think – considering he's more of a smaller speed guy, you would imagine Sanu would probably be a better matchup against him given his size and given that Hardy is more of a quickness route running type of guy, and that's not necessarily the type of favorable matchup you would want going up against a guy like Robey in that regard. So I do think, you know, probably this week you'll see a lot of Hardy on the outside, probably like we've seen for much of this season. And if that's the case, this probably won't be a breakout game for Justin Hardy by any means. But, you know, who knows? Maybe I'll look at the tape and be like, oh, yeah, you know, Troy Hill is a guy that Justin Hardy could exploit to the 2 catches that we see, you know, that Hardy seems to get maxed. You know, maybe he'll get 3 catches this week or something like that. I don't know. Last question comes from Us Diallo. This offense still not putting points on the board. What is the Rams defense vulnerable to that we can take advantage of? Again, yeah, I'm gonna watch the film later this week, and I'll give some more in-depth analysis to that. But just, you know, monitoring the Pro Football Focus grades, I would say the linebackers look particularly vulnerable, particularly a guy like Ogletree, who I heard earlier in the season was playing well under Wade Phillips, but you know, there are certain players that Pro Football Focus is not a big fan of. Ogletree is definitely one of those players, but I would say when I've watched him the last couple of years, they were very justified in their not grading him particularly well. His coverage grade is pretty low. And so I imagine the Falcons could potentially dust off their old game plan from the Broncos game last year when they went against Wade Phillips and they attacked Todd Davis and Brandon Marshall, particularly in that game, because that was really the only area where the Falcons really had an advantage offensively, because, you know, the Broncos have arguably the best trio of cornerbacks in the league. And, you know, T.J. Ward and with Von Miller in the lineup, one of the best defensive fronts in the league. So it was really, that was really the only place where the Broncos were vulnerable. Not, you know, I don't think the Rams secondary is quite to the level of the Broncos is. And, you know, Aaron Donald, you know, as long as you're Aaron Donald on the field, you are in the running for the best defensive line in the league, if we're being honest. But I don't think they're quite as sort of formidable. Brockers is good. Robert Quinn didn't have quite the season I think a lot of people, including myself, expected from him this year. Mark Barron's had a pretty good season, but he's dealing with an injury, may not play this week. We'll see about that. But so, yeah, I think, you know, going back to that Broncos game plan, you know, we used Tevin Coleman quite a bit, got his speed one-on-one against some of those linebackers, given Wade Phillips' proclivities with blitzing. There are going to be some one-on-one opportunities. We'll see how aggressive he is going to be. You know, non-aggressive for Wade Phillips still is going to be, he's going to blitz. He's going to bring five or six guys probably on a third of the snaps. So, you know, and that's a conservative game plan for Wade Phillips, generally speaking. You know, I don't know if he's going to throw a ton of blitzes at the Falcons just because of the presence of guys like Julio Jones and the fact that the Falcons burned him on that last year. But I do think, you know, getting Tevin Coleman involved in the passing game would be a good strategy given some of the personnel potential matchups. Obviously, the question is whether or not Sark is going to do that. We saw them get Devontae Freeman very much involved in the passing game last week. Tevin Coleman, not so much. Obviously, he had a couple of big plays in the passing game, certainly. And so we've seen him, you know, we saw it against the Saints. We saw it against Carolina. He'll make one big, you know, play in the passing game. It does seem like there's a couple that they leave on the field. So, you know, hopefully if the Falcons are going to be able to overcome that this week against a high-scoring Rams team, I do think, you know, we need to get that level to, you know, they get 100% of those plays that are designed for Tevin Coleman to get those big plays down the field. So we'll see. We'll see. That, you know, that's my best answer right now, at least without really watching too much film on the Rams to really sort of break things down. But again, we'll talk about that later in the week once I do that. So guys, that's it. Appreciate all the questions. If there are any leftovers that I get the rest of this week, then I'll be sure to post those on LockedOnFalcons.com. If you want to get in touch with me, you can do as we did and send a Facebook message. The Facebook page is Locked On Falcons. If you prefer Twitter, like some of the other people that send in questions, like Brandon and Luke and Dominique and Trey, then you can also tweet at FalcFans. Also, if it's podcast related, just let me know in that tweet. Otherwise, just send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. Again, if you don't like character limits, you can email at LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. You can also post a comment on FalcFans.com and LockedOnFalcons.com, where the show is posted daily. So that's it, guys. We will be back tomorrow with a preview episode talking about this Rams game, crossing over with the host of Locked On Rams, Brad Mader. And potentially on Friday, we will also be back again with another preview episode with a potentially second guest previewing this upcoming game. You know, we take the deep dives on this podcast when the big games are coming along. So certainly you guys will definitely, by the time Saturday evening arrives, you guys will be well prepared for this upcoming game. So definitely stay tuned to that. And until then, you guys stay locked on. Falcons will rise up. And we will always be in this brotherhood together. You would think for someone who has said that probably 75 times this year, that it would be less awkward. But if you thought that, then you don't know me on this podcast, because I'm going to make everything awkward.
You are Locked On Falcons. your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.